You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm live right now, sitting at press level in the end zone. Danny's back in our studios, and we're pleased right now to go to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. And welcome onto the show our buddy Joel Corey, a former sports agent who is an expert on all things NFL contracts and salary cap. Joel, it's good to have you back on in D.C. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Very well. We're well. We're not convinced that Terry McLaurin and the Commanders are closer to a contract than they were a week or two ago, even though he is now off the PUP list and he's not going be allowed to continue to kind of rehab in perpetuity. What do you make of where we are in this never-ending saga?
So I'm a little surprised that there hasn't been an agreement reached. One thing I'm curious to see is whether he's now going to have a hold in since he is past the physical as opposed to getting cover for what potentially would have been a hold in, because you can't do anything until you pass the physical. So that'll be telling to me. Is he out there going through full practice or trying to ramp up to practice, or is it going to be like Trey Hendrickson and nope, until a deal's done, I'm not doing anything?
Joel, what's his recourse, talking about McLaurin's recourse, now that I guess all parties agree that he's healthy? I don't know if that's the case. You can correct me if I'm wrong there. But so what sort of could happen now on his end? What kind of levers do he and his agent have left to pull?
That's called the hold in. And we saw last year with the 49ers that Trent Williams holding out didn't bother Kyle Shanahan as much as Brandon Ayuk holding in. Because in that situation, and there was more drama in that one than this one, that Ayuk wasn't practicing until he was either getting a contract or was traded to someplace of satisfaction. And the out of sight, out of mind thing seemed to be what Shanahan preferred as opposed to a healthy Brandon Ayuk being a distraction.
Joel Corey on Grant and Danny with us here on The Fan. So, Joel, I get that if he holds out, you can fine him $50K a day, and it's $811,000 if you don't play in a game like tonight. But when he holds in, especially when he's on the PUP list like he has been, he doesn't have to worry as much about the fines. How does that work from the team standpoint, though? You know, are they able to fine him for conduct detrimental? When can, and how does that work for them to start levying fines? If they say, you're ready to practice, take him off the PUP list, but he still refuses to.
Yeah, well, teams have a lot of recourse. Most of them, for a core player they're trying to negotiate a new contract with, don't exercise their rights. The first thing you should do as a team is put in writing, spell out what the issue is. And in this particular case, one thing you could do is cite paragraph 2 of the NFL player contract. That's the employments and services paragraph. The most relevant portions is to give best efforts and loyalty. Player will report promptly for and participate fully in the mini camp, preseason training camp, all meetings, practice sessions, all preseason, regular season, postseason games scheduled by the club. And also, Article 42, which is Tannehill's club discipline, and treat a practice where you aren't a participant as a missed practice. And there's a different fine amount for that for the regular season and the and also the preseason. It's less than the $50,000 per day fine. And also warning the player that they could be fined for conduct detrimental. The maximum fine for conduct detrimental is 1 week's salary and a suspension of 4 games. And suspensions aren't paid.
Our guy Joel Corey with us here on Grant and Danny. Joel, you wrote for CBS kind of an outside-the-box explanation or you know idea here for the contract. Let folks know what you were thinking.
Yeah, it is outside the box. The two sides are having a fundamental disagreement on value where they're not close. Maybe try to me, I've heard from an agent and also team execs that sometimes the right deal is one where both sides are a little uncomfortable or neither side is particularly happy with it. So from the base value, you come up with a compromise amount and then kind of make a bet on who's right. McLaurin wanting $33 million per year or the Commanders wanting a lot less. And there's a salary escalator, which you see in a fair amount of NFL contracts, and the very uncommon salary de-escalator, where if a player doesn't achieve a certain statistical level, then he's going to lose money. But there's a way to extinguish the escalator by hitting something in the escalator. The escalator has to be high enough where it's something that wouldn't be easily achievable. So that's just the basic concept of the thinking outside the box idea.
Salary cap expert and contracts expert on the NFL business, Joel Corey, is with us on Grant and Danny. Joel, who do you think is more right? If the numbers that we're assuming, based on reports, are correct, the team saying that McLaurin should be down around $25 million per year, or the player who wants $33 or more million per year?
I think McLaurin's a little more right in this case. I think you're going to have a hard time if he comes off that 33 number, which I think he needs to just because DK Metcalf, I understand why he's there. DK Metcalf is 2 years younger, and you are slightly more productive, but he's a physical freak in nature. Highest paid number two receiver is T. Higgins at $28.75 million per year. Granted, he might be a number one on a whole bunch of other teams if he got into the open market or forced to trade off of the franchise tag, but in Cincinnati, he's a number two receiver. Second highest paid number two receiver is Jalen Waddle with $28.25 million per year. So you get above that, then I think you got something to work with. If the Commanders aren't going there, then I don't know how you're going to get a deal done. One thing that McLaurin's camp should be asking them is what production do you expect from Terry McLaurin at $25 million per year on a go-forward basis, since you're paying him for what you expect him to do, not for what he has done in the past. And based on that answer, that can give the agent some ammunition to work with to try to refute what the Commanders are thinking or show the production for what they're talking about is more in line with potentially what the Commanders are thinking. So that would be a key question I would ask.
Joel, in your estimation, outside looking in, has somebody misread this situation, thinking from the team side, maybe underestimated how, you know, maybe dug in the agent and the player are, and the agent maybe underestimated the team in some way? Has anybody kind of misevaluated in your view?
Yeah, I think both have. Mm-hmm. One, I think there was the false security from the agent. We got a deal done last time in June. We can get one done fairly quickly. But this is a different regime, and how they think about things isn't the same as when you did the contract in 2022. And two, from the team standpoint, you don't pay anybody really on this team if you look at it. Highest paid player is someone you just acquired in a trade, Laremy Tunsil. You have to redo him next year at the latest. You got a rookie quarterback, so if there's ever a time you are going to, quote-unquote, overpay someone, now is the time, since you are in a Super Bowl window with a cheap quarterback.
Joel, am I wrong to say this, though? I feel like other than the Gold Jacket Hall of Fame types, Davante Adams or somebody, there's not really a precedent for a guy McLaurin's age getting what he's asking for. Now, I know what his agent's saying. His agent's saying, don't worry about the age. We're going into year 7 and 8, and that's when guys get paid, and the team disagrees. They're going, yeah, they do get paid then, but you're older. And that's how they're on different pages. But am I missing one? Like Mike Evans, Cortland Sutton. I know Terry's a better player than Cortland Sutton, but the market for an older guy is the market, right? Who's gotten paid at his age that isn't, you know, one of the greats at the position over the last bunch of years?
Well, the agent should contend. Mike Evans took a hometown discount to stay put because that deal was done before free agency and he's a little bit older. You can explain away Sutton because last year is an outlier if you look at his career. Was he really the number one receiver prior to Jerry Jeudy getting traded? That's why I would get back to what are you expecting him to do on a go-forward basis? You tell me what you expect out of him. Is it what he's been doing in the past? Is it a slight reduction, 70 catches, 900 yards? You tell me what you think this $25 million per year is worth, and then I'm going to take whatever you numbers you think that he's going to put up and look at what the average production, the average salary is for that production and go from there. But that's why I think that's a key point to ask. But you are right that from the standpoint of recently – the older receivers haven't gotten paid. But if you're expecting him to be the same player he is, which is the player he was when he signed a lot younger, then that supports the idea that maybe you should be paying him a lot more than you're offering.
Joel, in your time as an agent, the complicated part of this is we're talking about a future contract when Terry is under contract for this year. So sort of regardless, he owes a season. And I know that's his only leverage to kind of guarantee that future deal. But when would you advise or what kind of dialogue would you be having at this point where you go, hey, you got to still play this year, right, if we want to get the things that we want to get? Like, walk us through that, what might be going on right now.
Yeah, you have to give your player the worst-case scenario or the downside in a situation, because really, Terry doesn't have a lot of leverage. His leverage is this team isn't what it will be with him fully out there. He's your deep threat. I know Debo has flashed that during training camp, but he's really a run-after-catch guy, underneath guy. So if you guys are going to get to where you want to go, you really are going to need a fully invested Terry. But at the same time, he's got to look at what's my alternative to signing. It's a potential franchise tag next year, which will be slightly over $30 million. And then if you play that out, you're going to be, because next year you'll be, that's your season of 31, you'd be 32. That's not an optimal situation either. So at some point, if you haven't already, you got to come off of this $33 million per year number. Yeah, I understand why you want it. You're not getting it. And try to come up with a deal you can live with that you think the Commanders could live with.
Is there something to be said for, and I know you've been on the agent side primarily throughout your career, but the Commanders could tag him, as you just said, at 30 and basically have him at 2 years and $55 million for the years that they want him for, even though it's a hard bargain and I don't love how we've gotten here, that Peters is doing not only the right thing but a really smart team thing. Just sit back, do nothing, tag him next year. He can be unhappy, but he'll be unhappy here.
Yeah, but do you really want a Terry McLaurin who decides to me, most players aren't healthy by midseason, and they ignore injuries to play football. You really want him, well, you know what? I'm hurt. I'm not playing through this, something you could have played through otherwise, and your season starts to go sideways. That can kind of be cutting off your nose despite your face for him. But it wouldn't be the first time a player has decided, I'm going to try to preserve myself. And then that takes away his argument that durability is not a concern. So it could go sideways in a lot of manners.
This is also, and Joel Corey with us here on Grant and Danny, it's partly a game of chicken. You're hoping that somebody blinks first or somebody kind of backs down and then, you know, sort of crosses that line there in the middle. What's the clock look like here as we're starting to look at the regular season a few weeks away? The preseason schedule is kind of odd. They don't play a real game for 3 weeks, but it is 3 weeks away, and he hasn't done much just yet. How could you sort of see this playing out with that kind of, you know, ticking 60-minute style clock in the background?
Well, he's got to figure out how long do I need to be ready to play and be the player I've been throughout my career so far. I think on one level, the new regime has proven their point. They can drive a hard bargain. I know one of their concerns has probably been, this is our first big negotiation. We don't want to set the tone that we can be pushovers or we can be taken advantage of. I don't think anybody's going to say that, regardless of what you get if there's a long-term deal consummated by the two sides. But he's got to figure out, when do I really need to start going to play football? Because he can't sit out the whole year. His contract would toll. One, he can't leave, because then that becomes a whole nother issue, because you could be sent a 5-day letter. And if you don't come back at the end of the 5-day period, the team has the option to put you on the reserve left squad list and your season is over.
So let's get a prediction from you before we let you go. And our contract and salary cap expert, Joel Corey, always great here on Grant and Danny. You see his work on CBS, and he is just so sharp as a former agent on all of these matters and helps us navigate them. So give us a prediction on how you think this ends, contract, no contract, what it would look like. And then also, if you don't mind, just for my own curiosity, he's off PUP, but they haven't had a practice yet, really. Do you think he's going to practice as soon as he can now that he's off PUP, and that was mutual, or do you think that's just the team taking him off PUP and it won't change anything?
I'll address the contract part first. I think a deal gets done. I think it's a 3-year extension, so that runs New Year's 26, 27, 28. Whatever's in the first 2 years of the contract, 25 and 26, will be fully guaranteed at signing. The question is where there'll be any guarantee in 2027, and when does that vest, in 2027 or 2026? I think it's a deal that both teams don't love. It's slightly over T. Higgins. Maybe there's some incentives and escalators for he can get closer to what he wants. I don't think he practices initially. I could be wrong, since he's off PUP, because then it's a hold-in, unless the two sides are starting to make movement and get close, and then he might feel better about practicing initially. But at some point, it wouldn't surprise me if the Commanders decided to start exercising their rights, which most teams don't in these situations with a hold-in.
Joel, awesome as always, man. Really appreciate it. Talk soon.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Looking for jewelry that feels as good as it looks? Jenny Bird delivers modern designs that are comfortable, easy to wear, and effortlessly versatile. Every piece makes you feel instantly on trend without trying too hard. Need to send a gift they'll be sure to love? Jenny Bird ships fast, and the packaging is thoughtful too. Jenny Bird isn't just jewelry. It's your new favorite style essential. Explore more at jenny-bird.com and get 20% off your first purchase using code ONTREND20.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you.
Great insight from Joel Corey.
Welcome back to the Junks, coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan, Team 980, 910 The Fan in Richmond, and Monumental Sports Network. We're brought to you by our friends at Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. If you're looking to be the next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just go to cropmetcalf.com and you can join their team. We're scheduled to be joined by Warren Sharp, great NFL analyst, founder of Sharp Football Analysis. He should be with us soon.
I think he's calling now. But by the way, did you see that the Nats are sending their number one pick, Eli Willits, to Fredericksburg,
ah,
which I think is actually a little higher than maybe people had anticipated for his first assignment.
Part of the Fred
Mats. Might have to go down there.
Very good. Very good.
Check him out.
Yep. I did see Dylan Cruz. We get this email from their PR. He went 1-for-3 with a double, RBI yesterday, but he's 8-for-25, 2 doubles, a triple, 2 home runs, 7 RBIs in his last 8 games.
All right. That works.
All right, let's head now to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. It's Warren Sharp, NFL analyst, founder of Sharp Football Analysis. You can check out his 2025 NFL preview on sharpfootballanalysis.com. And he's also big now on YouTube as well. He's in that game as nice. Well. What's up, Warren? How are you?
Hey, good morning, fellas. How are you doing?
We are doing well. Did you think that we would be at this point with Terry McLaurin on Thursday, August 21st, a hold in, still trying to angle for a contract extension? I thought he'd be signed by training camp. I'm stunned by the fact that we're almost into September. Real games are right around the corner, and Terry McLaurin still not practicing with the team. Are you kind of stunned by the developments or lack thereof?
Well, we know that deadlines drive decisions, and so there's a very good chance that this still gets done, just in my opinion, based upon experience watching things. But I am surprised that we are still here, given the fact that Terry has admitted he wants to be here. He's played his career here. And the money that's being floated around that he's asking, and now I was reading an article yesterday that's saying it's reaffirmed that they were hearing that he is actually looking for DK Metcalf slightly north of DK Metcalf money. And there's only 3 receivers that are making north of DK Metcalf money. And that's CD Lamb, Justin Jefferson, and Ja'Marr Chase. And I don't view Terry McLaurin in their echelon at all. So I just don't think that he is getting the right advice for what he is worth. And maybe they're just too dug in at this point, but it certainly is a little bit surprising.
I think they might be a little too dug in. I mean, I wish him the best, but that's the thing that's so shocking to me is there seems to be very little movement.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we obviously know what Terry McLaurin has contributed to the team and the value that he adds to the team, and you know they will be missing him if they can't come up with a deal. The crazy thing about it, you know, I was double-checking the numbers today. Mm-hmm. Of passes over 20 yards down the field, Terry McLaurin leads the entire NFL in percentage of team targets. 51% of the Commanders' targets last year that were thrown beyond 20 yards downfield went to Terry McLaurin. There's not another receiver in the NFL who had a higher target share of their overall team targets. I mean, he's obviously quite valuable to the team, and I don't believe Deebo Samuel is anything close to a one-for-one replacement based upon the way Deebo plays the game and the way that Cliff Kingsbury is planning on using Deebo Samuel. So the Commanders will be losing somebody pretty important to their scheme if Terry McLaurin is not on the team this season. But that said, I mean, there's the contractual element to this, and there's the upside that you have a young quarterback that you're not paying a lot of money. You have a lot of options, and maybe they want to do something else next season. I really don't know where they're going to go from here if they don't get Terry for the 2025 season.
So I saw you tweet about the 49ers and how they've been snake bitten by health. And when they're actually healthy, they go to at least like NFC Championship games, Super Bowls. So it kind of makes it hard to predict. They still have like this great talent, but injuries have really besieged them for 5 or 6 years now, right?
Yeah, it's been something that I would have never thought a team would be dealing with this many injuries. And what's funny, although Matthew Stafford is banged up right now, we'll see where he ends up going from here. When you look at the difference between two teams in California, both coaches are really good friends with regard to Kyle Shanahan and the LA Rams head coach, Sean McVay. Sean McVay's team has been extremely healthy, and Kyle Shanahan's team has been top 5 most injured in, I believe, more years than they've been outside the top 5 in injuries since 2018. They've been number 4 most injured, number 1 most injured, number 3 most injured, and number 1 most injured in 4 out of those seven seasons. And like you said, the 1 year that they were really in good shape, they went to the Super Bowl and lost it. That was in 2023. And you know, there's obviously with their luck, there was no way they were going back to back. They were the number one most injured team last year in 2024. It's tough. It's tough to win games when you don't have the players that you signed to deals, because that's money out the door that you're not getting back. You can't replace it. Backups need to step up. And Kyle Shanahan's done as good of a job as any coach at trying to get guys to play well in his scheme. I mean, there have been very few years that they've just been abominations out there when he's been coach of the San Francisco 49ers. But hopefully they'll get back on track soon.
Warren, what's your best guess about J.J. McCarthy? Can he step right in and keep the Vikings afloat as a playoff team? We saw what Sam Darnold did there last year. I mean, nobody expected that sort of performance from him. He moves on now. He's in Seattle. Can McCarthy, in year two, kind of give a poor man Sam Darnold performance for the Vikings in 2025?
I think he can. There's going to be some limitations, and it's not going to look like it looked last season. The interesting question that I have for the Minnesota Vikings this year is just how aggressive does their coach, and the reason I think it can is because of their coach, Kevin O'Connell, but because I think he's great. But the question is, how aggressive do they get from a play calling perspective early in games? Because this is a team that scored, I believe, the number two most first quarter points last year. They led at halftime in among the most games of any team in the NFL. That makes life very easy on a quarterback in the second half when they're playing from ahead. That makes life easier on a play caller who doesn't have to call such aggressive plays for a quarterback who's trailing. J.J. McCarthy is going to need those crutches as much as possible. But if they don't build those leads like they were doing last year early in games, because they're being a little bit more conservative with J.J. McCarthy, then this team is going to be fighting tooth and nail in the third and fourth quarter. He's going to be getting blitzed far more frequently, and it's going to be a less advantageous situation for the Vikings. So that's the biggest question that I have with them. Obviously, there's going to be a read recognition, talent-type drop-off, because he doesn't have quite the level of experience at this level as Sam Darnold did. But and Sam Darnold got away with so many throws last year, if you remember watching those games. So many theoretically interceptable passes that were not intercepted by the defense. Some lucky bounces, some lucky breaks, some great efficiency, all-time career best efficiency throwing the ball 20 yards down the field from Sam Darnold last year. J.J. McCarthy, we should not expect that to happen year one. So it's going to be more difficult, but I do think because of the coaching and the scheme that he's in, he's going to settle down and play relatively well, all things being considered.
Talking to Warren Sharp, NFL analyst, you can check out his 2025 NFL preview on sharpfootballanalysis.com. I saw that you were talking about how important it is to be under center for Caleb Williams versus last season when he was in shotgun 87% of the time. I don't know the numbers. You would know the numbers for Jaden Daniels here in Washington. Tell us why it'll work better for Caleb to be under center more, because it seems like Jaden's in shotgun a ton too.
Jaden is in shotgun a lot, and that's Cliff Kingsbury's scheme, and it works for Cliff. The difference being that in Chicago, they have a new head coach, and he's Ben Johnson. He came from Detroit. And one of the biggest things that they did in Detroit was utilize more under center last year. The highest rates of under center snaps that we have seen in the NFL since 2021. And as a result, it makes everything look similar. Like runs look like passes. Passes look like runs, especially when you're utilizing a little bit more heavy personnel to do this out of. The defense is caught off guard. They don't know what's coming. And I think the reason that they pivoted, that Ben Johnson pivoted to doing that, was because they saw the efficiency that Jared Goff had when he threw out of shotgun in 2023. And they wanted to find a way to get him under center with play action. They saw the efficiency he was getting out of play action. They wanted to find a way to introduce a little bit more play action to the game. And the way to do that is play a little bit more under center. So they ramped up their under center rates in 2024. That is exactly what they're going to bring to Chicago. And we saw last year Caleb Williams really struggle when he even attempted to use play action, and they almost were always using shotgun. Now this is going to be an offense that's going to play a lot more under center, but they're going to play under center in a better way with this new scheme. And I really think it's going to ramp up the efficiency that Caleb Williams gets when he throws the ball out of play action. And I think that's going to raise the whole floor of the Chicago Bears passing attack. It's just the fact that they've got an expert in there now who's going to get them under center more to confuse the defense pre-snap, use play action, which confuses the defense post-snap, and Caleb Williams is going to have a lot more success as a result. So I'm really excited to see that unfold here. By the way, real quick, you guys mentioned the book. I do have a special coupon code. Anybody who's listening, if they go to that link, sharpfootballanalysis.com, if you use the code junkies, you'll get the book for only $1. And that will last until the beginning of the season. But this is 585 pages. I spent months working on this book, 32 team chapters previewing the season. We are coming into the season very close. Guys don't have a lot of time to read the book, so I don't expect them to pay full price right now. You can get it instead of $35 just for $1 with code junkies.
That is, I mean, I'm buying it.
By my math, that's like 99% off, Warren. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a crazy deal.
Well, we got to get people are running into their fantasy drafts. There's tons of information for fantasy drafts in the book as well. So there's good.
I know what I'm spending a dollar on today.
Who do you like on the Commanders fantasy wise now with Brian Robinson most likely on the way out?
Well, the crazy part is we obviously saw your new running back go ramping up the draft boards in JCM. So the value isn't there quite as much. But look, I still think this is going to be a team. You got to look at Jaden Daniels running quarterbacks in today's NFL. He found a way to keep himself relatively healthy. He's got a new left tackle. I think obviously he's the cream of the crop in terms of quarterbacks. I'd rank him right there, top three in terms of quarterbacks. So I'd be looking at him. And of course, you know, look, I think this is a team that is going to probably be throwing the football more in 2025, simply because I don't think they're going to go 12-5. I don't think they're going to convert as often on fourth downs. I don't think they're going to have as much success in some of these late situations. They may not build leads as much as they did, and they're playing a much more difficult schedule this year overall, especially of opposing quarterbacks. So they're going to have to put up points, and that's not going to come as much from the running game as it will the passing game. I had already, guys, just so you know, for my clients, I had already given out Brian Robinson under on rushing yards because of all of those reasons I just shared. I bet him under 750.5 rushing yards like a month and a half ago. So I don't know where he ends up now. Obviously, I hope he doesn't go to a team where he's going to be the running back one and then get over 750.5 rushing yards. But I think the backfield is a little tricky, especially with the way that JCM has moved up the board right now. I don't know that he's great value. Of course, Washington, D.C., like locals, are going to want to get as many Commanders on the roster as they can. And so I understand if you might reach for him.
Warren, you talked at Sharp Football about Anthony Richardson. You gave a really detailed breakdown of just some of the shockingly bad numbers since he's been playing for the Colts. Where do you think is a good landing spot for him? And do you see Shane Steichen like using him in goal line packages just to keep him kind of involved? Like, what do you think the future holds for Anthony Richardson, either in Indy or somewhere else?
That's a great question. It's really hard to say because when they made the pivot, they mentioned, you know, that this is going to, we don't want to have a short leash on Daniel Jones. Mm-hmm. And I will add, like, I definitely, if you follow me on X, I definitely told people pretty clearly why I thought that Anthony Richardson was not going to be the guy in Indy. And I was betting on that. I bet Daniel Jones to be the starter like 3 months ago. But the issue was the public and everybody else was betting on Anthony Richardson. Anthony Richardson moved up to like minus 350 favorite to be the starter. Daniel Jones was the decided underdog, but I just, based on what the coach was talking about and the fact that he wanted continuity, he wanted just the capability of being consistent from his quarterback. And that includes making the right checks and all of those other things. I just felt like Daniel Jones was the truer professional, had that experience, and was going to excel in that regard. I was surprised Daniel Jones didn't look decidedly better throwing the ball in camp, but Anthony Richardson does have the much bigger arm, makes the much bigger splash plays down the field than Daniel Jones does. I truly don't know. I mean, your idea is great. Utilize him in goal line packages. Is he going to buy into that? His agent seems very involved at this point, criticizing and coming out and criticizing the team. Would his agent want him to be just used as like some sort of mobile Tim Tebow type goal line quarterback this year in Indy? Or would they demand like you could start him or not, but we're not going to just be used in as to be a running back, basically a glorified running back at the goal line. So while that would help the Colts win games more, I don't know if he's going to agree to a role like that. And where else could he have success? I'm honestly not sure, because if you look at Shane Steichen came from the Philadelphia Eagles. He called plays for Jalen Hurts. He designed an offense for Jalen Hurts, a mobile quarterback who could utilize his legs and run the football. He brought that same design and ideas to Indy. They designed this offense for Anthony Richardson to excel in. People make the mistake of saying that, oh, well, Anthony Richardson only played 15 games. He didn't get enough time. He was there for over two full years as the quarterback number one, took all the reps in camp, and still was making elementary mistakes in his third season in the same offense that was basically handpicked, hand-tailored to make him look like a good quarterback. And I think the coaching staff, between the quarterback coach and the head coach who's calling his plays, threw their hands up and like, we can't get it through to this guy. And so if you say that's not having success in Indy with that type of build around a quarterback, you know, he's not going to go to San Francisco for the 49ers and just get plugged into Kyle Shanahan's offense and work out. I really don't know where it goes from here for him, but obviously I hope he has another chance. But statistically, he really was bad over the last couple of years, the worst in the NFL from an accuracy perspective.
Warren, let our listeners know again how they can get your 2025 NFL preview for a very, very steep discount, and also let them know how they can watch you on YouTube.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. YouTube is just go to Sharp Football Analysis. We're up on YouTube now, and I'm going to be trying to give a lot of videos there over the course of the season, throughout the week. And then sharpfootballanalysis.com, you can get the 2025 football preview over there for just $1 if you use the code JUNKIES, and that'll save you from $35 down to a dollar. Go buy something nice with the $34 that you're saving.
Well, I hope you have one of those data centers in Ashburn for all the traffic, because I'm guessing a lot of the listeners are going to hit up that special. That's awesome, Warren. Thanks so much for doing that, man.
I appreciate it. No problem.
Thank you, buddy.
Appreciate that time. That's Warren Sharp, NFL analyst, founder of Sharp Football Analysis. Get his 2025 NFL preview on sharpfootballanalysis.com. Use the code JUNKIES. The price goes from $35 to $1. It's a pretty good deal, so you should go take advantage of that. We will do EB's entertainment page when we come back.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Dende sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. All of our training camp coverage on the Team 980 is brought to you nationally by Geico. Switch and save. Get more with Geico. To talk training camp for the Commanders and everything that's gone on out there over the past few days, we welcome on our guy David Harrison of the Locked On Commanders podcast. Good enough to join us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. David, did you play any Where's Waldo this morning just for giggles?
I mean, it's pretty much a daily exercise, right? I mean, I think we'd be lying if we didn't say that every day we came out to practice we're trying to spot, you know, number 17, see if he's going to be out there or not.
Do you think today is going to be the first day where you see him with a 17 jersey on?
You know, I don't get the sense that that's going to happen. I have a feeling that we're probably not going to see him until Wednesday before the Giants game.
Wow, that's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah.
So are you of the belief
perhaps
that he'll
be at the game this weekend?
That has been a very big point of contention on the show so far, David. You believe that he is going to get an extension at all, or is he going to play on this current deal?
I mean, it's really up to him, right? Like, I think that the team has offered him, you know, what is probably perceived as fair market value. And if he wants to accept, fair market value, then he can have it. And we can all move forward, you know, with what's going to happen next. And he can continue his climb up the ladder as a franchise great. If he doesn't feel like he's being compensated fairly, then he certainly has the right to bet on himself and play out the year. And, you know, the Commanders always have the franchise tag in their back pocket, so he's got to be kind of aware of that situation as well. But, you know, so if he's asking for the money that, you know, we're thinking he's asking for, the Commanders don't have to give him that money until at least, you know, 2027. And by then, you know, whether or not he's going to feel like he has the ammunition to demand it then is going to, you know, something to be seen. But I think, you know, the question comes down for Terry, you know, it's a matter of pride versus legacy, I think. You know, obviously his pride is kind of hurt, feels disrespected, as he said publicly. But, you know, if he's concerned at all or values at all his legacy, you know, the best way to cement his legacy is to get another 2 or 3 years here with the Commanders and you know, get into that top three range in franchise history and do that. So, you know, it really comes down to what each individual person values.
How has everyone else looked at wide receiver in the absence of Terry?
Yeah, Debo's looked great. I think Debo has looked like everything that, you know, fortunately for me, that I sold to my listeners when they traded for him, because I definitely went hard on the I'm not worried about, you know, his illness from last year and the weight that he gained or muscle mass that he lost then and all that. So fortunately for me, he's proven me correct in that aspect. You know, Luke McCaffrey has been kind of an up-and-down case this training camp. Like, he's had some really good practices, but then he's also not really kind of appeared in the games yet. You know, I think the big grain of salt there is, you know, his biggest rapport is with Jaden Daniels, and usually when he's on the preseason field, Jaden Daniels is not. And obviously we saw that one drive that Jaden played this preseason. They didn't throw the ball a single time. They only called one pass. So, you know, you can't expect Luke to go out there and light it up in that type of a situation with your starting quarterback. So, you know, I think there's a big grain of salt to be taken there when we get to the regular season and Luke has that rapport with Jaden still, and that's who he's working with, you know, exclusively. I think things could look better there. Jalen Lane has been incredibly impressive. The coaches have said that he's ahead of schedule. I think he's far better in this system than I expected him to be as a rookie. I had high hopes for him as an offensive player in year two, but definitely not what he's done so far in year one.
Do you think that he will get some sort of significant snaps during the regular season on offense, even if Terry is there?
Yeah, I mean, I think he will. I think even if, like, Noah Brown is healthy and able to come back, you know, if you have Terry, Debo, Noah Brown, Luke, and Jalen, I think that because Jalen does something different than what Noah Brown does, he does something different than what Luke McCaffrey does. So I think there's definitely got to be a package in mind if you're Cliff Kingsbury, where you have Terry, Debo, and Jalen on the field at the same time. And really, from a defensive standpoint, I mean, you put one of those guys in motion and you keep one of them on the opposite side and you've got Terry over there being scary as usual. I mean, I don't know how you defend it. And oh, by the way, then there's Zach Ertz, you know what I mean? Like, so it's just, it's a terrifying, you know, perspective for an opposing defense to have to face. And I think Jalen has proven that he has what it takes to thrive in that system. And, you know, look, any rookie would benefit from having receivers like Terry McLaurin and Debo Samuel on the field with them. But that doesn't mean that, you know, they should steer away from it just because someone on the opposite side of the fan aisle might try to discredit it. That, you know, maximize it, exploit it. And, you know, heck, if Jalen Lane comes out the leading receiver in a couple of games, his defenses are so focused on stopping the other guys, so be it.
How many wide receivers do you anticipate that they're going to keep on the final 53?
I think right now I've got my number at 6. I'm actually working through my own personal 53-man roster projection. I've got some spots that I need to make some tough decisions on, and, you know, certainly not as tough as the real decisions are going to be. But I think right now I've got 6. You know, I think Terry, Debo, Noah Brown, Luke, and Jalen are your easy 5. And then that 6th spot, you know, really kind of comes down to Michael Gallup, K.J. Osborne, and Ja'Cory Brooks. And that's where I'm kind of battling. And also got to make a decision. Like, is this what I would do, or do I want to try to be predictive and say this is what I think Adam Peters will do? So I've got to decide that as well, because obviously one of those decisions is easier than the other.
David Harrison, our guest here on the Kevin Sheehan Show, with Dent Day sitting in. You can find him on Twitter at dharrison82, and you can find his podcast, The Locked On Commanders, wherever it is that you get your podcast. So with Brian Robinson either being shipped out of town or being released at some point, everybody loves Bill, right? We all love him. Is he going to be running back 1 week number one, or are we overlooking Chris Rodriguez?
You know, I kind of think that position group might just be really fluid, you know, and kind of like the depth chart version of positionless basketball, right? Like, the star is going to go to the first guy that's on the field, or the first guys that are on the field. They go with the two-back set, right? But really, it's just going to be matchup-based, you know? So when you look at the New York Giants and you look at how you want to attack that defense, which back fits how we want to attack this defense the most,
And then as the game flow goes, you know, which back is having the most success against his defense with these looks, and that's going to be the guy. I really kind of think that's the way he probably has to set it now. You know, the big caveat I think you have to add to that is, you know, this team, and you know this, I know, like, this team does more work than what we get to see. Even during training camp, we get to see more than we get to see during the regular season, but we're still not seeing how the entire sausage is going to be made. So if there's things in the background where, you know, Chris Rodriguez is just kind of blowing the door off of things, or if Bill is doing the same, then, you know, certainly you can see them lean into one of those guys. But just using kind of what we've seen on the practice field, I definitely kind of feel like there's a three or maybe even four back rotation where it's just going to be a situational decision on who gets the touch and who doesn't.
What about Bill being at training camp just about every single day? What about Bill has impressed you so much?
I mean, just so first and foremost, like before he even arrived to Ashburn, you know, when he was drafted during the pre-draft process, when I learned about him, you know, and the fact that, and I keep calling it this, you know, fully intending to take a shot at the NCAA, you know, he lost all but one game of his final collegiate season due to what basically boils down to an accounting error. The NCAA didn't count his eligibility correct, and then once they caught their mistake, they punished the kid, you know what I mean? And I just think that's garbage, but that's a whole other discussion for another day. But, you know, for Corey Crosby Merritt to then stay at Arizona to participate with the football program, you know, to within the limits that he could, and then to show up to the Shrine Bowl in an all-star game, having not played for meaningful football for months, and just show out, you know what I mean? Just be the MVP and do all those things. I mean, that's such an impressive thing. We see guys every offseason, you know, that are in the NFL getting paid, you know, hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars, come back from their offseason knowing they've got meaningful football ahead of them, and, you know, not always in the best condition to go execute that mission. So for this college kid to have that mindset, which is super impressive before he ever even got drafted, and then getting to know him a little bit and seeing him on the practice field, he's every bit as advertised from a maturity standpoint and a mentality standpoint. But then his physicality, man. I mean, the kid cuts and moves without losing, you know, a millisecond of miles per hour on his flow, and just the way he sees the field. Even before pads came on, they were doing some run sets, and you just see him finding the holes and all these things. It's been incredibly impressive. And, you know, you try not to, like, hype them up too much, because you don't want to get to, like, insane levels of expectation, but it's really hard not to be excited about what you see out of him.
David Harrison with us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day, sitting in for Kevin here on the team, 980. David, on the defensive side of things, specifically the defensive line, who are some of the names that have really stood out to you while you're watching practice?
Yeah, Javon Kinlaw has to be, you know, one of those first ones you mentioned. I know DQ highlighted him specifically coming out of the preseason game, but, you know, shout out to one of our fellow reporters, Candy Waller of Bowie TV. She has been doing a lot of homework on Javon Kinlaw and really watching him at practice a lot, and she kind of pointed out to me a couple times, you know, how impressive he's been, and turned my eye onto him as I'm watching maybe some other players. But he, you know, for a guy that every national, you know, talking head that could wanted to tear down his contract and do all these things and talk about Adam Peters overpaying him and everything, you know, it's still very early, obviously. But just from the sample size that we do get to look at, he looks every bit, you know, worth the contract that Adam Peters gave him. And I still push back on the overpay, you know, evaluation, just from the fact that the Commanders need to move on from him next year. They can do so and actually save a little bit of money. Not a lot, but a little, and that tells me the contract's not terrible. But, yeah, I think he's looked like what you expected them to bring him in for, adding that strength, adding that tenacity, kind of that dog in the defensive line. He's certainly added to that.
Do you think we could see any five-down sets, if you will, with the three of them, Kinlaw, Payne, and Newton?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly possible. Obviously, you know, the offense is going to dictate that a little bit, and you know, that question is going to get answered a little bit more on the opposite side of, you know, how many times are these opposing teams going to go, you know, with maybe heavier sets and things like that. But the great thing you like about, you know, some of these other players, like Dietrich Wise, you know, has the opportunity or has the ability to play up and down the D-line. Kinlaw has the opportunity to play up and down the D-line. You know, Johnny Newton's got a little bit of quickness in his feet and things like that. And don't get me wrong, again, I don't want to get crazy with any type of hype or anything. I'm not saying you should, you know, be dropping these guys in, like, hook zones or anything like that on a regular basis. But, you know, if every once in a while you want to throw a five-man front at him and then make the quarterback go, oh, man, like, these guys are just not going to cover anybody, and then you surprise them with some long-arm DNs or something like that out there in the flat or wherever, you know, it's not necessarily a bad mind game to play if you time it right, right? And that's something that Joey Jr., the defensive coordinator, has talked about is, you know, games are fun, but you got to play them at the right time. And those are certainly the kind of games that he's got to be contemplating. Whether or not we'll see it early or even often, I doubt it's going to become a staple, but certainly if you come up against a team that wants to try to, you know, run the ball down your throat, that's certainly a look that they're going to be able to go to.
Is there any position that you are worried about?
I think the position you have to be worried about, you know, just if you're being an honest broker, there's three of them. And I think and the problem is they're all on the offensive side. So you're really kind of hoping that, you know, Jaden and a little bit of good luck is going to save you here. But the O-line, you know, we haven't been able to see the real starting five really ever, right? Especially if you count Sam Cosmi, right? If you count Sam Cosmi with his door being open to potentially come back early in the season, we've never seen him. But even without Sam, the other starting five, if you want to call it that, we've seen very little of. So that's, you know, concerning from an outside perspective. The running back room, you know, this is a conversation I had when the Brian Robinson stuff first started. It's just watching at camp, like, it still looks like Brian has been, you know, kind of the best back for this team between the lines. Now, this business goes beyond the field, right? And there's certainly other aspects of whether or not a team decides to stay with a player and all that stuff that we can't get into. But, you know, so that being the fact, it kind of goes to your question, right? Who's the RB1? And, you know, some would say, well, if you don't have an RB1, you don't have any running backs at all. And some would say, you know, we go back to last year in the wide receiver two situation. And, you know, who's wide receiver two? Well, this week it's Olamide Zaccheaus. Next week it's Jamison Crowder. Who cares as long as we have one when we need him, right? So there's two sides to that conversation. And then the receiver room. I mean, you know, again, Luke hasn't flashed in competition. And so that could be problematic. Jalen is a rookie. So how much of it is a flash and how much of it is real? And Terry hadn't been on the field. So like, there's a lot of questions you can have there as well. So it's. I think there's certainly some things that need to get answered there. I think that's why you see a little bit of that frustration from Cliff last week that we saw when we talked to him. And you know, I know Jaden is being the leader and putting on the good face and everything like that, but there's got to be at least a little bit of a question in the back of everybody's mind if this offense is going to be able to get to where they need to and click against a very tough New York Giants defense in week one.
Anything Sam Hartman can do to at least make the practice squad, or his day's numbered here?
I feel like he's probably going to end up on the practice squad. Like, you know, there's really, this way, I don't think it hurts the team to put him on the practice squad, right? So you give him that opportunity. You know, he's real tight with Jaden. He's real good for that quarterback room. His IQ is something that people praise a lot. And, you know, when he's throwing on time, you can see that IQ really kind of shine. But, you know, he reminds me of Taylor Heinicke a lot, where he's got to not even sometimes anticipate the throw. He's almost got to predict the throw. And I think that's really hard in the National Football League when you don't have the arm strength to deliver the ball late or to deliver the ball exactly on time. You know, it kind of goes back to, you know, we all had those bosses that say, if you're not 15 minutes early, you're late. Well, that's kind of how Sam Hartman has to play quarterback, you know, and that's really, really difficult in the National Football League to do. I think there's still enough there that, you know, if the coaching staff believes in him, then there's value in bringing him back on the practice squad, you know, for at least one more year. So I don't know that his days are numbered per se, but I think the quarterback three conversation is certainly over and done with.
David, appreciate the time as always, my friend. Enjoy practice, and who knows, maybe we will actually see 17 out there, though I'm not optimistic.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you.
That is David Harrison, host of the Locked On Commanders podcast, at DHarrison82, where you can find him on Twitter. Good enough to give us some time here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin.
106.7 The Fan. Commanders head coach Dan Quinn set to join us any moment. Obviously, pretty cool to get the coach to sit down with us.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Looking for jewelry that feels as good as it looks? Jenny Bird delivers modern designs that are comfortable, easy to wear, and effortlessly versatile. Every piece makes you feel instantly on trend without trying too hard. Need to send a gift they'll be sure to love? Jenny Bird ships fast, and the packaging is thoughtful too. Jenny Bird isn't just jewelry. It's your new favorite style essential. Explore more at jenny-bird.com and get 20% off your first purchase using code ONTREND20.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not sure everybody knows that you and the coach have a long-standing, close relationship.
We just talk.
Yeah, maybe close is wrong, but, like, certainly cool. Like, it's always
respectful.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting for your relationship with coaches than it is mine, because they're always going to look at you differently as somebody that achieved greatness for this organization and grinded through it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Try my best. But, you know, think about it. I just like to let them know I'm available if need be. You know, not to play, okay, just to help out if I can. I think a lot of times people don't see that olive branch being handed out, being extended, and I tried my best to do that, and Coach was the same way with me.
Well, I think at various times people have been, like, scared of former players around. And one thing I applaud Dan Quinn, who's joining us right now, is never had those concerns. Thanks for doing this, Coach.
Awesome, man. I wanted to start
with something.
You want to start something?
No.
I got Brian.
He
want to
start something. Yeah, we're going to whip you up.
You have the Punisher logo on your watch. I do not want to start anything. Do you or have you ever had social media?
Yes.
Have or had?
Yes.
Do you look at it? Like, do you get caught up in?
The only people I follow are the players.
Okay.
And it's just to have a better understanding of, you know, some things maybe in their background, their lives, their families. So that's the purpose behind it.
How much do you think, over your years in coaching, how much do you think social media has changed things or impacted the lives of players?
I think quite a bit, JP. And some for good, for sure. And also some that I think the distraction and the things that happen outside the walls can come in. And maybe the saying goes, comparison is the thief of joy. I think sometimes it can steal a little bit of the joy. JP's got that. I don't have that. B. Mitch got that. What's up with that? So I think that can happen at times. But I also know, like, this is how this early generation, like, this is how they have grown up. So if I don't change and accept it and know that that's, you know, that they would rather text with me than get a phone call from me, like, I have to learn that as I do social media. But, like, hey.
I'm calling them anyway, Coach.
Yes, I do too. So my wife sometimes says, hey, old man, they don't want to get a call from you. Just text them. I say, well, I'm calling. I don't want no gray about what I'm saying.
B's a caller, dude.
See, the thing about me, I can text you. And I don't get anything. When you send me a text, I don't know exactly what you're feeling. But if I hear your voice, I'll read it.
Yes.
So, you know, they all know. I do social media because I have to.
Yes.
But I'd rather not.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a bunch of lies.
I think, like, to get everybody back current, sometimes the best part of a locker room is just being with the guys. I'm sure that's probably one of the things that you miss about playing. And every once in a while I'll walk through and just a lot of for the purpose just to – let me stay connected at a stronger level with the players.
Coach, we were in here and we heard a lot of music coming.
Yep.
We know practice is coming up. Did you have a practice early?
No. What? Like, we do it as energy also. So there's, you know, time before meetings, you know, we get it going pretty good.
There we go.
Team meetings, special teams meetings. So you can kind of get the vibe of who's running it, what's playing. And, you know, I can tell you what, like, special teams music is different than what happens at offense. So, but yeah, we do like music and use it as an energy for us here. And, that's every day.
What is it? You are such an energy and brotherhood and camaraderie type coach. Like, it's really been remarkable to watch it get built, and even just little things that maybe folks don't notice in all the locker rooms I've been in, most of them, it's all position groups, right? And last year, the first thing you did was start mixing everybody up. What's it like to watch that get built last season, and then how do you continue that this year?
Yeah, I think it's a, I don't know if it's a Green Beret quote, but brotherhood is not something that you force. Like, you have to forge it. Like, it's not something that you just, you have to do this. Like, you have to create space for people to lean in, have conversations, talk to one another. Of course, some people will just, you know, whatever it is, you know, where you're from, you just get a connection. But, like, the true part is, like, on the field, they're connected to an extension of each other. So for Brian to pick up the blitz, for the ball to be thrown down the field for the completion, you had to take the line, had to take him. We see the completion.
Mm-hmm.
But here we try to recognize all that goes into that. You know, yeah. You might see the defensive sack, you know, the other night, and maybe didn't see excellent coverage down the field, but you saw the result. And so here we want to make sure, like, when you're looking across that huddle and it's in January and it's 80,000 people and it's loud and cold, like, you're looking across the huddle, not just some dude, but like, that's my guy. I'll fight for him.
Yeah.
And if you can get to that space, it's a big deal. But around here, it's like, we've got a very good environment to improve. We've got a good culture, but you do have to go get it on too. So I want to make sure I'm also clear on that. Part of the brotherhood is the play style, the attitude of how you play, giving it up for one another. Like, that's part of it too. And so I think that's important to say. Like, you can have a nice environment. We are optimistic. We do try to develop people. I think there's a culture of, like, people improving and getting mm-hmm. better. But, like, at the end of the day, when it comes time, like, you have, this is how we get down. Like, we've got to play physical. That's why we cover kicks. We, you know, we want our play style to also be a certain way. And so I think that's important to mention.
Coach, we come out here, we are impressed by what we see on the field. We see certain players, we get impressed by it. You see them from infancy all the way through.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you get impressed as well. We were doing a little thing earlier saying the guys that we thought impressed us, what we see as a potential Pro Bowler.
Right on.
Who's impressed you this year, the guys you see come out and they are reaching their potential?
Yeah. It's easy for me to go from year one to year two because those are people that make the biggest jumps. And so I can say that early on I saw it with Jordan McGee, and I see that with McCaffrey, and I see that with Coleman, that switch to guard and what it can be. So that's where it starts for me, of guys mm-hmm. going from, like, one to two. Sainer still is certainly one. Quan Martin mm-hmm. is one. I thought
that's
he had a very good year. But, like, man, he's further. And some of it's the unseen work. Like, he's also becoming one of the leaders around here. And his voice, his effort. So he would also be one for me that is like, okay, this guy's turned into a real heavy hitter. On the special team side, Yankoff has been one that mm-hmm. I felt him covering kicks and being physical. So those are a few for me. But Quan, I'm seeing it on, off the field. You've heard us talk about leaders like Tressway or Jeremy Reeves, Zach Ertz or Wagner. But, like, Quan Martin, like, that's part of our job of, like, identifying and bringing along other leaders. And mm-hmm. if you have a lot of them, man, you got a chance to do good things. And Quan, he is turning into a team leader, not just, you know, somebody that does his thing at a good level.
I always think Pro Bowl voting is a year behind Pro Bowl play. I think Quan's going to be in that conversation.
That's well said.
You talk every day, right? You get asked a zillion specific football questions, and I don't want to waste our time here doing that. But I had, like, more of a philosophical question for you. You've been in this league a long time. You've seen the business of football at times impact training camps and sure. the play of football. How do you balance that with the guys of, hey, we know this is going on, but we got to go out here and focus on what we got?
They know what's up, and so shoot them straight and say, this is what's happening, this is where we're at, but I wanted you to know so they hear it from me first. In the old days when he was playing, they didn't have social media to say this was happening, this was happening. So I'd still try to be in front of that. So I recognize, especially JP, this time of year, there's some moving parts with trades and things that go on and contracts. So I just try to, man, keep it down the middle with the guys, and knowing that they're going through a process as well. But the guys that are on the field, like, we got work to do, and I try to make it about that. Because if we're worried about, you know, what's not happening, like, that's Adam, his team, man. Like, I trust him knowing that they're putting that work in too. So it's injuries, it's contract, trade, like, it's all part of the gig, man. So, like, if you can, like, you know, keep it in the middle and not try to ride the roller coaster, it helps. And then I also try to, like, keep it real with the fellas. They know something's going on. So if I don't share that, like, what's up? And so I'd rather, you know, let them know than have them figure it out, you know, some other way.
Last one for me. I know, like, we get excited at the different parts of the football season. Where are your emotions when you're looking at, okay, we got training camp ending, last preseason game, and now I'm ramping up for the season?
Once the next week gets passed, because I don't look forward to Monday and Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Roster going down to 53 to that spot. So then it does shift. You know, okay, this is the group, and I say I'm hopeful that the team that we have at the end of the year would beat the hell out of the team that we have at the starting point. Because then you're getting better and you're getting better. So I can tell you that the one that will be starting will be strong. And I hope there's a lot of ceilings that we can go to. But I get excited, different moments. First time of the offseason, everybody together, mini camp, start of camp. So it's like little markers along the way, you know. And so next week will be another one as we get prepared to start the regular season. But just like I told some of these guys who don't know, am I going to be on the 53 or the 70 or either? Man, like, don't let next week affect this week.
Yeah.
You've seen too many people do that where they're worried, am I going to do this or am I going to do that? That's not going to help you play better tomorrow. I mean, excuse me, Saturday. So, man, like, I'm trying to do the same. Not let next week affect me this week and what we need to do and how to get down.
Last thing for me.
You just said that a moment ago, I think.
No, B said that. Okay. B said that.
All right.
There was a moment in Monday night's preseason game, not on the field, when Bill runs that touchdown in, and then we see Jaden run over to the refs to get that ball. What did that mean for you to see your second-year quarterback have the sense of the moment and just the leadership skill?
Yeah. That's the brotherhood that you were talking about earlier, knowing that, like, Zach and Terry had done that for him a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you hope next year Bill has that chance to do that for somebody else, knowing that that's his way to pay it forward, for the next one to pay it forward. So it doesn't surprise me that, like, Jaden was right there doing it, man. This guy loves football. Like, if you see him on the sideline, his smile was big. Like, he wasn't, like, too cool for school, hanging out in the back. Like, he was pumped.
Yeah.
And that doesn't surprise me that he was the one. Is that the one asking to the next referee to make sure it was the exact one?
Yeah.
So, you hope that's a tradition that just keeps getting passed down to the next.
Well, speaking of traditions, your second year coming in the tent with us. Thank you very much. We appreciate it, man.
Awesome, man. Always cool to be on with you guys.
Thank you, DQ. Right. Appreciate it, man.
All right. See you
guys. Have a great practice. Thank you to Commanders head coach Dan Quinn for joining us. He's got practice to get to. Appreciate it sincerely. You're listening to B. Mitchell Finley. We will be right back.
Welcome back. Grant and Danny on the Fan. You can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Pre-game ahead of Nats baseball with Charlie Sloz and Dave Jagler coming up at 6:15, and the first pitch of that ball game slated for 6:45. You've got post-game tonight.
Indeed, this evening. I pretty much only do Brad Lord starts now. That's kind of my exclusive agreement.
That sounds about right, because I've missed the last couple Brad Lord starts at home.
I have had nothing but Brad Lord starts lately. I had a UK trip in between, still doing Brad Lord starts.
We've got Mackenzie Gore, member of that rotation, coming up on the show in just a couple of moments. He'll be joining us here in less than a minute. So looking forward to seeing what he has to say as we get ready for the Nats and the Mets game 2 of 3. But Lord has been a revelation. You know, in that rotation this year, a lot's gone wrong. Mitchell Parker's gone in the wrong direction.
Jake Irvin has
massively regressed. Lately, Cade Cavalli's become a huge story, and he's pitched very well. But Lord has been the guy, really, circuit to circuit this year, who has been the most excitable and maybe projects ahead positively. Let's get to the Rude guest hotline right now. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV.
And we are joined by Mackenzie Gore, presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Mackenzie, last time out, you took on one of the better lineups in the National League, and you give up just the 4 hits and the 2 runs over 6 innings, strikeout 7. First inning, and you ran into some trouble, but this is the kind of outing early in your career maybe that you might not have had, where you lock it in. I think you retired 15 of the final 17 batters you faced, something like that. How were you able to get on track after the slow start and have a really good outing?
It started was a little shaky. We didn't win a couple pitches. You know, we got back to 2-2 on Trey, and we didn't locate a changeup great, and that was a hit. And there was some certain pitches in the next few guys that we just didn't win, and then but then we were able to start winning the counts, and we got going there, and we were able to get through 6. And you kind of understand going in, if you're facing Wheeler, that it's going to be tough to score. So I think we faced each other 3 times. They're all very similar games, and you kind of just knew it was probably going to be like that going in. So you just tried to hold them at 2 and give us a chance.
Mackenzie, I always wonder for, not that there are that many guys like you with the kind of world-class stuff that you have, but how much are you focusing, paying attention to scouting reports versus, he may hit most fastballs well, but he doesn't hit mine. You know what I mean? Like, what's that push and pull for you like in terms of kind of being strict to the scouting reports versus your stuff and how you feel that day?
Well, I think just knowing what the hitter's trying to do just makes you feel prepared and gives you some more confidence going in. But you got to know what you're good at. You got to try to repeat that as much as you can. That's what good players do. Obviously, you know what guys are good at and what they struggle at. Use that when you need it. But you have to be really in tune with what you're good at as a pitcher. And so I think there's a good mix of both.
Nats All-Star lefty Mackenzie Gore back on track. 12 innings, dominant, 17 strikeouts, 7 hits last couple of times out. Getting ready to pitch against the Mets tomorrow, which we'll ask him about. I know you're at the ballpark at like 1:30 in the afternoon, 2 o'clock most days before your starts and leading up to the outing. Can you just take people through the routine as a starting pitcher, like between outings and what that looks like?
Yeah, there's a lot of work that nobody sees for a starting pitcher just because, it's every 5 days. The day after a start, you got a lot of work to do to get your body ready to go. Again for the next one, and you go with workouts and getting your body throwing, working on things you need to work on for the last one, and then there's the part of getting ready for the team that you're about to face. So it's the cool part of being a starting pitcher, but there's a lot of work that nobody sees, and the ones that have a consistent routine and know what they need end up being probably the best pitchers. And it's all about trying to figure out what works best for you, and you kind of learn something new each year.
I remember talking to Max Scherzer, and after some of his outings, like he would be having the wife open the ketchup bottle for him or whatever. Like he would have, an arm that was fatigued as the year went on. For you, the day after an outing, what's your arm normally feel like?
Not great. it all depends. If you a night game into a day game, you're obviously not going to feel like you do a night game into a night game. If you jump on a flight right after a start, you typically feel worse after that too. So there's all things that, kind of can change, how you feel a little better or worse. But you don't feel very good the next day. You need the day to get your body moving, get some recovery. And that's why we don't pitch every day. So
Mackenzie Gore with us here on Grant and Danny. Are you a got to play catch the next day, or I got to rest the next day? I don't even want to hold a pen.
Yeah, I don't throw. I played with some guys early in my career, and they just talked about how if you don't throw the day after a start, it's like a month off once the year's over. So obviously there's a lot of arm care and you know, getting the full range of motion the day after that you do to strengthen, just because you do need to move your arm, but I do not play catch the day after.
What's the part between starts that you actually kind of enjoy, and what's the part that you're like, God, this is a chore, this is painstaking, this isn't fun, but you know you got to do it?
I mean, I think by this time of year, nothing feels great in between starts, but, I mean, preparing for a team's always, you know, always fun. If you face them a few times, kind of seeing what you've done, what's worked, what hasn't worked. And then side days are kind of your day to really go work on some things. So that's always a big day whenever you throw your bullpen in between your start. So that's probably the biggest workload day in between, and that one's always fun.
Mackenzie Gore of the Nats joining us on Grant and Danny. So you're getting tuned up for the Mets, which will be the finale of this three-game set, day game, matinee style. For you, when you look at that lineup, Juan Soto went left on left, prodigious home run last night. What is that matchup like? And as far as facing Soto, what are the things, having done it as much as you have probably now in your career, that come to mind when you got to take on a hitter like that?
Obviously Juan's a really good hitter. He's one of the best hitters. And he knows what he wants to hit. He's got a really good plan up there, and I think that's what makes him so good. He's not just going to go swing a bunch of stuff that's, you know, out of the zone. He's a really good hitter. He's got a really good idea of what he wants to do. And you just have to be kind of relentless of attacking him and getting him off of certain things. And if you do that, you can get him out. But like I said, he knows what he wants to hit. So if you throw it where he wants it, he does some damage. So,
are there guys? So I'm thinking of David Peterson last night, who has just been terrific over his career against the Nationals. Sometimes those kind of matchups just happen. Do you have a team like that, or maybe a lineup or two where you're just, I mean, obviously you're good against everybody, but where you just sort of feel extra special?
I'm sure there's lineups I've had success with. The crazy thing is it can change that, can look a lot different after one start. I'm sure there's lineups I've pitched well against. He has been really good against us. So it's kind of crazy how, I mean, he's obviously had a great year, but when they flash the numbers of his career against us, it's impressive.
Yeah, the Mets are 13-1, I think, in his 14 career starts against the Nats at this point. Mackenzie, what do you make of what Cade Cavalli's done since he's got to the big leagues?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's worked hard to get back here. He's also a guy we wanted to see up here. Obviously the injuries, and he's got real stuff, you know, but he just needs to pitch, figure out how to use it. And he's been great. You know, he's kind of gotten better each start. You know, I think the first one, he went 4 1/3 or so, you know, his first one in however many days. So that was really cool for him. Kansas City, it's hot in Kansas City, and they're a good team. And, you know, a couple big swings kind of made that outing not look quite as good. Then he pitched great against the Philly team. So he needs to keep pitching. He's got a great arm and just keep learning about himself. And I think, you know, he's a real piece. He's got great stuff, and he just needs to pitch. So I'm looking forward to watching him.
Are there things that you've picked up over the years from teammates that you, you know, are kind of implementing today? Just thinking about watching the way, you know, maybe Cavalli holds his breaking ball, or, you know, Trevor Williams is throwing his sinker, or whatever. Do things like that kind of come up for you that you're tinkering between starts and trying out?
I think, especially if there's a guy that's similar, from who I played with in San Diego, there's things that I've, like, as in, you know, for example, the not throwing the day after.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of small things you take from guys, just that you, it's almost watching them. I think you can learn from them, you know, how Corbin was able to make every start. I think our staff has done a really good job of watching how he took care of his body and how he was able to take the ball every 5 days. I think that's a real, you know, that just doesn't happen. You know, that takes a lot of work. There's always things you learn from each other, and, you know, it can be something small as a, you know, a arm care thing or exercise in between, or it can be, like you said, a grip or a thought process of when you're throwing a certain pitch and stuff like that.
Thanks, Mackenzie.
Yep.
Mackenzie Gore of the Nationals, presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. With Nats pregame looming, let's keep the content coming. The leadoff is brought to you by The Window Man. Since 1989, The Window Man's been the educational window company. Get your free and home estimate or visit thewindowman.com's all-new Fairfax showroom. It has been a tough season for the Nationals and certainly been a rough season from the pitching staff's standpoint. Not on the Brad Lord front. He has been outstanding, and the upstart arm is back on the bump tonight.
His stuff plays up, GP. Now, I'm old enough to remember when if you told somebody he throws in the mid-90s with a breaking ball and a changeup, you'd go, man, that's a front-of-the-rotation starter. That now today is just sort of an everyday Eddie. But there's something about it. Hitters don't look comfortable against him. The ball jumps at you a little bit. It kind of plays up, a la Sean Doolittle's fastball with a little carry, a little ride, et cetera. He hides it pretty well. He's kind of in the middle now of an extended audition to have a shot to be in the rotation next year, and he's run with it so far. It's been really impressive.
Kodai Senga on the bump for the Mets, which means a chance for Miguel Cairo to get his young lefty outfielders back into the lineup. Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler have pregame coming up in moments. Right here on your flagship home for the Nats, 106.7 The Fan.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.